This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we've had a little bit of interesting and surprising news this past week that came out of Las Vegas with Stan Allen reporting that he would not go forward with Magic Legacy. When we were at the Magic Live convention, he had announced this new project that was going to be another 25 magazines or issues that would be coming out over the next couple of years, and that there would not be a Magic Live convention in 2017, and there would be no more Magic magazines. Well, all of that went out the window when he released a video last Friday and said that, no, we're going to cancel Legacy. There will be one more issue of Magic Magazine, and also that we will be having a 2017 Magic Live. Well, that certainly caused a lot of buzz in the Magic community, and of course it resounded throughout the social media on various forums. And so after some of the dust settled, I had contacted Stan to get his side of the story to see if he had any more insight that he would care to share and perhaps give a little bit of explanation as to some of the decisions that he had made. So this week we're going to start off with that little bit of news story and hear from Stan in his own words what exactly had gone through his mind as he was planning this and kind of what he has in store for the rest of us. After we hear from Stan, then we're going to begin part one of an interview that I had with Garrett Thomas. Garrett has been coming through the U.S. on a nationwide lecture tour and stopped in Houston towards the end or middle of the tour, and we got to chat for a while, and I should say quite a while, actually, that one thing led to another, and I kind of felt like I was sitting in a lecture hall listening to a teacher that was giving us just tremendous information. I couldn't write down notes fast enough, so I didn't have time to, you know, raise my hand and ask a question. So throughout this interview, it's really more one-sided where the student is listening to the teacher, and I think you will feel that same way too, because you really don't want to interrupt when someone's on a roll and they've got a lot of good wisdom that they want to impart. And again, there was a lot of information here, and there were other things I wanted to get to, and so it wasn't until towards the end of our discussion that we got into other things like him working with David Blaine and some of the stories on that, plus his time at the Forks Hotel in Buffalo, New York, or actually Tonawanda, I guess. And some of the experiences he has in working restaurants, et cetera. But that was towards the end of our chat, which we're going to put into next week. I try to keep these podcasts right at about an hour in order to accommodate those of you who are listening during your drive time or during your workout activity while you're jogging or whatever type of aerobic exercise you might be doing. So I, again, I'm going to try to limit this to around an hour and then give part two then next week. So you don't hear so much of me, but you hear more of what you came to hear. I'm going to let you hear, first of all, from the editor of Magic Magazine. Here is Stan Allen. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and this past week we had an announcement by Stan Allen, and in three parts, basically he was saying that Magic Legacy was not going to be happening. And so I thought that since this is newsworthy, it's important that we go straight to the editor himself to speak with Stan. So good morning, Stan Allen.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I thought it would be important that we hear just a little bit more. We heard the announcement that you had made via the video, but can you give us a little bit more detail, the thought behind this process to make the decision?
Sure. It was there were a lot of details and lots of things that went into the decision to not do Legacy and to do one more final issue and to move on to Magic Live. First and foremost, I am passionate about doing things better. This is what my family tells me. And they also tell me that it doesn't matter if I was the one who did the things before. That the excitement for me, and this is true, the excitement for me is being able to do something like it's never been done before. And that goes back to the newsletter days, to the magazine, to the convention. It's just, that's what's fun for me. That's where my passion lies. So in the process of Legacy, two things really happened there. One, contrary to what I normally am all about, which is under promise and then try to over deliver. Magic Live, we don't even tell you who's going to be there. Under promise, try to over deliver. And with Legacy, I found myself in a situation where I had promised a lot, and the hard reality is that the numbers we were getting were not going to allow me to deliver on those promises to the point of expectations, let alone exceeding expectations. And that was a very hard reality. And that reality started weighing down on me heavily. And while I didn't notice it so much in the mirror, my family and close friends noticed it. And so my passion was just burning up with this thing. I was losing it. And consequently, when the numbers didn't develop, it was a long conversation with my family. And then the decision was made that if we can't do this better, then why are we doing it? Why am I doing it? I had no interest to just extend Magic Magazine for 2 years. I wanted to do something up and over the top. And this whole decision has been going on for a couple of years, too, as we approached the 25th anniversary.
But when you're saying the numbers, are you referring to a certain number of subscribers as opposed to a financial number that you're trying to hit? In other words, was this a pretty much purely a financial decision?
Well, it wasn't purely a financial decision, but finances obviously come into play. It's a reality today. Magazines, print magazines are a struggle today. There's no question about it. We've been fortunate to be able to, keep our numbers at a point that work and our finances at a point to work and Magic Live at a point to work. But, those days are numbered. And at least that's my impression of it.
Are you saying for all magazines or in particular for Magic?
Well, I can't speak for all magazines and I can't speak for Magic magazines. I can't believe all magazines are going away. I mean, we have online banking, but we still write checks.
Right.
And we still read books. There aren't as many bookstores around, but we're still reading books and stuff. So will the Magic fraternity be able to support the number of high gloss magazines that are published every year? I don't think so, not for too much longer. So will one or two survive that? Possibly, but that's a different subject.
One of the things also, Stan, that I had read on some of the social media were comments by people who were saying, why was he looking to us to pay for the magazine? Wouldn't it have been easier just to have a Kickstarter? And that way you could have raised money that way. And if you didn't make enough money, then you could stop. I mean, that's the way Kickstarter works. Did you ever think about that? Or was that a possibility?
You know what? I wish that person had contacted me about 6 months ago. I laughed when I saw Kickstarter, because how many Kickstarter campaigns do you spend all the money to publish a book, square one, send the book out to people? We spent – Legacy is a costly misstep and attempt. Mm-hmm. So, no, it wasn't a Kickstarter. That was never in my mind, that if we won't get enough numbers to do this thing and that I would feel the strain of that and the stress of that. And but that would have been – it might have been a better idea to just say, here's how many people we need. We'd like to hit this. If you guys want to jump in, jump in. And if you don't, don't. We wouldn't be having to refund money right now. That would be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
That's just one of those hindsight types of things. Well,
absolutely.
How about having just someone who is an angel who comes in, for an example, like Randy Pitchford, who is backing Genie Magazine? Has there been someone that perhaps you could have gone to or may have come to you or maybe even Randy himself and talking with someone to say, hey, would you be interested in funding the magazine?
Well, over the last 2 years, as we prepared for our 25th anniversary, I knew that the time was coming, and that was not something that I was looking, I was dreading at all. And it wasn't something also that I couldn't wait to have happen. It was just felt the right time to do this. And so over the last couple of years, and even earlier than that at different times, I've had serious conversations with Richard Kaufman. We discussed merging the two magazines. We discussed Genie buying Magic. We discussed a trade scenario that was weird. We had many conversations over the years about this. And also there have been two other major players that approached me when they heard I was having these conversations, and we had more conversations with them. And I also, after Randy Pitchford purchased Genie Magazine, I had dinner with Randy, who I find to be a great guy and a sharp guy. And he shared just a little bit of his vision for Genie magazine with me. And I knew instantly that magic didn't fit into that. There was no reason for it to. And Randy saw that as well. And so that wasn't really an option. And when you're talking about this, if you're talking about retiring, if you're retiring a job, that's one thing. You're leaving the company and you move on. And but when you founded the company and it was your baby and you poured blood, sweat, and tears into it, and I'm the most thankful person in the world because that baby paid for 3 college educations and 4.5 sets of braces. I'm not even sure how that works. Also made payments on a house for us. And yes, I worked hard, but also I was very fortunate. And I considered that always a gift that the magic community gave me. And you want to have 2 things happen in a sale like that. One, the financial arrangement has to be good. It's not, you know, go away money forever today, but it would have to have something. And then the other part of that is that it has to take the product to the next step. And some of the things that were being discussed with other people, I just didn't feel like I wanted Magic Magazine to go down those roads.
You had also said that September 30th was going to be a cutoff, and here that you kind of cut off the legs before we reached that date. And I have seen some postings on social media where they've said, well, I was going to wait until the end. Well, even those few that might have come in at the end, I guess you feel like, hey, there's a point of no return and we need to make the decision now rather than disappointing people later.
Well, and that's where the combination was of the numbers and me, myself, recognizing that even if more numbers came in, were the numbers going to be high enough? Were they going to double and triple to be at a point that I could do this at the level I wanted to do this? So those numbers weren't there, and I just felt it was better to pull the plug quickly rather than let it go on and on. And so I did that. And also, it's complicated to shut down a magazine and make refunds and legacy refunds and everything else. And I wanted to move my team towards that quickly rather than slowly.
Well, going towards refunds, in fact, you have said, of course, everyone's going to be getting a refund, I guess, after the 301st issue will be coming out. But how soon?
Hang on. No, that's not exactly true. Legacy refunds are being processed right now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Which are separate from the magazine.
They're separate from the magazine. So if you just signed up for Legacy, your refund is in the mail. Well, not exactly, because so many credit card charges take another 5 to 7 days to reverse. But those, they've already begun processing those, the team here, and we should have all Legacy refunds done within 2 weeks. So that's the first step, is just taking care of all the Legacy. If you're a Magic Magazine subscriber, then we will start in on those, because those are prorated refunds based on how many issues you have left. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're working on, and we wanted to get on it right away. And at the exact same time, we're working on issue number 301, which I am really excited about. It's going to be the farewell of Magic Magazine, and we've got a couple of things up our sleeve that I think are going to be fun.
Are you going to use some of the ideas that you had saved for Legacy that you now be putting in 301?
No.
It'll continue to be similar to what we've seen.
Okay. No, I didn't think the answer was, na 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 na, here's what you would have gotten. I that didn't seem like a very good idea. And also, out of fairness to the contributors that jumped on board, which, by the way, I was overwhelmed.
They were legend.
They were. I contacted 75 contributors, and we were going higher than that. We had a target of 125, and I hadn't even gotten to some of the biggest names that I intended to get to. And out of 75, one person said, sorry, he was too busy, couldn't do it. And the rest said, absolutely. Don't know what it is, but I'm on board.
Wow.
And some of them had great ideas for what to do. But these contributors, they were just fantastic. And
well, could you share a few of the ideas? What were you looking at for the, what, now that we're not going to have Legacy and you were planning on surprises? And I know, I just imagine that whiteboard you've got there with all these different ideas you write on. Could you throw out a couple of suggestions?
Well, I'm not going to throw out a couple of suggestions for 2 reasons. One, again, the na-na-na-na-na feeling that I don't like at all. And besides, these are still just ideas, and they're ideas given to me by a number of people, and those ideas should go back to them. And number two, I'm going to try and pull some of those ideas into Magic Live in the future.
Nice. Okay. So we have, again, Legacy is not going to be happening, unfortunately, and we're having one more issue of the Magic Magazine. And
which comes out middle of November.
So it's going to be just on the regular schedule with the rest of what Magic normally comes out.
Well, it will be, except we've actually skipped September and October, and this issue will be the September 2016 issue. But it's issue 301, and that's what we're branding it.
Now, what about the digital edition? I know that not all issues of Magic Magazine have been digitized. Is that something that eventually will happen?
Well, I don't have any plans for that to happen. And when we announced Legacy, we said, no, we won't do any of that stuff.
Right.
Now, as we go forward, we'll see whether anything comes of that. That's not my plan. My plan is not to create a digital magazine. My plan is not to have a big digital file available. Magic Magazine was a print magazine. And, it takes up about 4 feet, 4.5 feet on your shelf.
Yeah, I know that right now we only go back digitally to probably, 2005 or 6? I don't think it goes back all that far.
We actually offer them back to 2011 only. So
okay.
That's when we became a digital magazine with our iPad edition. At the moment, no promises on anything, just we're going to do 301, and then we're moving forward to Magic Live, which we're going to do in 2017.
Before we go into Magic Live, one more comment I did want to make, and that was that you had kind of touched on this briefly, and you had said how that making this decision to not go forward with Magic Legacy was weighing on you heavily. And in watching the video, it looked like that the burden of the world was on your shoulders. I mean, you looked like the president talking and saying that we'd had some catastrophe or something. You looked like you were in poor health, and I was talking with someone who's a video editor, and he said, well, maybe if the room would have been a little bit lighter, maybe it looked a bit dark or something. But anyhow, my question is, someone had asked me about that. He said, is Stan doing okay? I mean, it looks like maybe that he's not physically well. I mean, are you well?
Yes, I feel fine. And that was a very difficult day. I'm not good on the videos anyway. I'm not an actor by any means. And that was a very tough one because the message was very, very important. And I wanted to convey, exactly how I was at that particular moment. And as a matter of fact, I have not watched that video.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen it. I know. I mean, we did it. We did many takes, many ways. But at the end of it, I went out and there was a bag of M&M peanuts, peanut M&Ms, and I ate those and felt a lot better. right away.
Good. Well, I'm glad you're well. Okay, yeah. Now let's go into Magic Live.
Sure.
Will the format of the convention remain the same even though there's not the magazine to format it?
Well, it's interesting. Magic Live started as bringing the pages of the magazine to life.
Yes.
And that was sort of a one-way street. Here's what we did over the last 10 years. That's what the first one was, our 10th anniversary. And the cover was the opening night party, and the dealers were the advertisers, and the speakers were the people who written for the magazine. And so it was pretty much a one-way street from our past history to you, and come live the magazine for 4 days. Very shortly, though, on the second or third one, we started to develop a different direction, and that was, yes, we would still present what we had done in the magazine, but we would also present things that hadn't been done that would later appear in the magazine. So now it was becoming a two-way street. And so Magic Live has evolved. And in 2015, we sort of scooted away from the magazine totally and went on a big adventure. And so we have had different format changes that are subtle. And, Magic Live is evolving. And it will evolve in 2017. It will not have a magazine to lean on. And we have a direction that we're going to take that's takes us in a new direction.
So it will be the same yet different.
Yes, I think it'll be familiar. I mean, we're still going to use the footprint that works, but we're constantly evolving.
Sure.
We're trying to find a way where you can go to every single event. Right at the moment we have focus sessions. You pick two out of three, and we desperately try to put together three diverse focus sessions and just say, well, a guy who likes mentalism maybe is not going to like
children's magic.
Children's magic. And so we put two of those on the same day. And,
but
we've now sort of played with another option, and that is where you could go to all three of them. And it's again, Magic Live will be, I hate to compare it to Disneyland, but the idea that Disneyland will never be finished, I think Magic Live will never be a cookie cutter, I think that's when conventions start going downhill.
One of the things you'd also said was how that you were going to be moving this from 2018 to 2017, and 100% of your effort was going to be now focused on Magic Live conventions, since the magazine, Magic Magazine, is not going to be your focus and there won't be Legacy. And so it sounded like that it had been moved from 18 to 17 and there would not be one thereafter. But as I understand, it will continue in perpetuity until some date.
Well, all we're announcing at the moment is that we're doing 2017. We previously announced 18, and yes, that will be there as well. So this is a shift. This is a big shift for us as well.
So you're saying for right now, at least there will be two more.
There absolutely will be two more. And we recognize the fact that making Magic Magazine for these 4 years, annual convention, that will change the dynamics just a little bit. But we don't think change is a bad thing. We think change is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that the Magic community is going to have to change also and have to learn to live without the magazine. Unfortunately, it's a sad thing for all of us. You've done a great job over the last 25 years, Dan.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks to the Magic community. Like I said, it has been a privilege. It's been an honor. It's been a gift that I knew at some point I would give back. And hopefully I've been able to get back a little bit in it, and maybe we've done things just a little bit better. I hope so.
We all appreciate what you've done over the years.
Well, thank you, Scott, and thanks to the Magic community.
So thanks again for being a guest and for clarifying some of the things. Now we've kind of let the dust settle a little bit and let this sink in. And I guess it's just kind of hard for all of us to let go, but all good things must pass. So again, that was Stan Allen for Magic Magazine. And until next time, this is Scotty out. Well, thanks, Stan, for coming on the Magic Word and giving a bit more explanation as to what was going on in your decision making. I hope that these answers will be sufficient for those who have questions. And I know that they join me in giving you a lot of thanks and appreciation for all that you've done over the past 25 years and more in service to the Magic community with the magazine and other things that you have done with the conventions and everything. So again, thanks, Stan, for everything. So now, let's prepare to be astonished and to listen to some words from the master teacher, Mr. Garrett Thomas. This is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and today I have with me as my guest, Mr. Garrett Thomas, all the way from Buffalo, New York. Hey there, Garrett. How are you?
Hey, Scott. How are we doing?
I'm fantastic, and so I'm excited about having you here, actually not just here, but on this lecture tour that you're on. You've had, like 23 cities or something that we got across the U.S. or
yes.
Something. So is this your first lecture tour, actually?
No.
Major tour?
It's my first. I mean, I've done 1 week here or 2 weeks, but nothing longer than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, you've been kind of out and on the road here for a while. And
oh, yes.
Still got a few more to go. And your lecture is going to be later tonight, so we're going to get to hear that. So if we would be talking tomorrow, I would be asking you some of the questions about, you know, some of the things you talked about. I know that some of the things you're going to discuss are not just tricks, but also the theory that is behind them.
Oh, yeah.
What are a couple of things you're going to talk about?
Well, it's really, I have a lot of different theories about a lot of different topics. And mm-hmm. Every time I do a lecture, I really am looking at the magicians and seeing what they need to hear. So it's likely I'll talk about problem people and how to take their negative actions and make them positive, mm-hmm. and not treating them like hecklers, because of course there are hecklers,
yeah.
But there also are people that are just, they know not what they do and they're just causing a problem. For example, a person that wants to shuffle the deck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying really to enjoy the magic on a more intellectual basis.
You don't think they're trying to mess you up?
No.
Hmm, okay.
Well, of course there are some.
Yeah.
But if you really think about it, if they ask, well, can you use my deck?
Mm-hmm.
That's an intellectual curiosity.
That's true.
They're trying to enjoy it on a deeper level. So yeah. I wouldn't call them a heckler. Nor would I call like the person that forgets a card. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even what I call, you know, I have names for these people. We have the Einstein, the Bogart, the Pinocchio, the French dropper, the shuffler. That's the obvious one, the copycat. But let's say you have the Pinocchio.
Okay.
The person that lies about the character.
Oh, okay. Right? Gotcha. Yeah.
So, and often when I talk to them after, they become the liar as an intellectual curiosity to see what you would do if someone lied. So they are actually going in it as, I always wondered if there was some mean person that just decided to lie, what you would do. And so they become the mean person as an intellectual curiosity to see what you would do.
Okay.
To, you know, and that is not the lie. I mean, it is, they become the liar.
Yeah.
But they wondered, mm-hmm. what would you, I mean, because they could just lie. They have that opportunity.
That option, sure.
So different ways to address these situations, ways to take a negative action. Instead of trying to be aggressive and put up a wall, mm-hmm. how you could spin it, how you could take that and make it positive.
But you say that you try to assess these values in people as you approach them. In other words, mm-hmm. that whenever I'm going to work at a restaurant, one of the first, or in a cocktail setting, I always try to identify the alpha male or mm-hmm. female. You know, yep. Who is it? I think that's the primary thing. Mm-hmm. I haven't thought much beyond that. And you're saying that you actually try to identify all these other personalities.
Like I have people that come out to visit me at my venues. They'll stay in Buffalo for a week and I'll invite them to my venues, and I'm doing 7 a week, so...
Different hotels? I mean, different restaurants?
Different, actually, every different night. Everything. It's, okay. You know, 3 of my venues I'll never get any shows from because, I mean, honestly, the clientele wouldn't be able to afford me. Mm-hmm. But I still do them because I want to test out my magic on the widest range of people. How dare I sell something and tell you you're going to have success with it if I don't try it on all different people?
Yeah.
So I have a pizza parlor. I have a chicken wing place. Of mm-hmm. course, it's Buffalo. I have a pool hall. I have a comedy club. I have a 5-star martini bar. I have a steakhouse. I have a seafood place. I have these... this one venue, you know, it's all these really high-end drinks, and it's done in... the speakeasy style.
So the personalities of everyone who comes to those are all completely different.
In 1 week, I'm performing for children that are struggling in school and
all the way to chief executives.
Yep, chief executives and football players and
celebrities.
You know, everybody. And so when I have a new idea, I can test it out in a wide range of people.
Right.
And that has evolved my magic to be very people-centered.
Okay.
So if I walk up to a group of people and it's 4 businessmen, mm-hmm. there's one way to address that. And because magicians will come when they visit me and they'll say, oh, what tricks are you going to do tonight? What's your set? And I'm like,
depends.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you got to know what's in your pockets. I'm like, everything is in my pockets.
We just talked about that as you were coming in a while ago, about how whenever that sometimes you go to the show, I end up bringing more things than I need. And some people say, well, I only bring 3 or 4 things because I'm going to be doing the same tricks over and over. Well, I don't do that because I feel that there's a different dynamic with each group. And so, plus this group may see what I just did over there, and I don't want to repeat the same thing necessarily.
No, that's,
are you agreeing with me?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I never perform the same set to tables near each other. If they're in eye shot or ear shot.
Right,
shot,
right.
Because you're really devaluing the moment you just had with
good
them.
Point.
And you have no reason for them to come back.
Right.
If it's the same set, they know they've seen
it. Seen it.
And it's done. So you really need to do a whatever evolves at the first table. Mm-hmm. I often, because if the next table's in earshot or visually they can see you.
Yeah.
You don't want to do the same set, but you got to also realize that the table you're going to now also kind of saw you in the background there.
Yeah.
So whatever I do, if they're close enough, I'll kind of use that first performance as a segue. I'll say, well, you saw what I did over there with the Rubik's Cube. I solved it. Well, that's a puzzle. And now now you can just take it further, and now you're just uniting the room, and it becomes a lot better. But if I come up to those 4 businessmen that they think they own the world, they think they know everything,
right.
I got stuff that's going to bring them down a notch.
Yeah.
But that same set would be horrible for the girl who broke up with her boyfriend.
Good point.
I got stuff to empower her and lift her up. Hmm. And so there's more mind reading than the Two of Clubs.
Yeah.
There's you need to assess the situation, because you know magic does say a lot of different things in its limited way of not saying anything, you know, because it really is dealing with an emotional situations. So you can remind people they don't know anything, or you could say everything's possible.
Yeah.
Right? And that could happen simultaneously, and that could be happening with two people right next to each other. One person hears this, man, we know nothing, and the other person hears this message of everything's possible and nothing is impossible. And that is almost contradictory, but it's there in
even looking at the same trick?
Sometimes the same trick.
Mm-hmm. It's just a different perception.
So I don't structure things around comedy. I don't use jokes as misdirection. I don't use anything that makes me a slave to the environment. So I've performed already at 7 funerals.
You put the fun in funeral.
Yeah. And and these were either magicians and they wanted me to do something, or a lot of my patrons that have been, you know, I've been at restaurants 13 plus years, and the widow is saying, you know, Bob just would come every week and this was his favorite thing and we want this to be a celebration of his life.
Right.
So I know this is weird, but would you mind doing by his favorite trick, you know, that he would ask you every week, can you do that again? Can you do that again? Uh-huh. And he loved it. Can you do that for us? And if my trick was structured around a joke, it'd be impossible.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, it would be so inappropriate to do that there. So I want to add comedy if it's the right moment.
Right.
And if the foundation of the principle, I've always said, you know what? I can step back a little bit and design the trick right, so I don't need a joke to cover it. And then I can use a joke or not. And it's an intellectual choice. And I'm not a slave to that particular principle. Because if you structure the sleight of hand or you structure the principle properly, you won't need such a heavy misdirection.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Well, we started off the conversation in talking about identifying those people like Pinocchio and everybody else.
Yes.
And so, as I said, that I would identify the alpha male. And so you actually try to assess each person and then, okay, in the group.
You want to identify the alpha male because you need him on your side, is the classic thought. But you really need to, you know, everyone has their role, and each one of them need to hear something different. Now, most of the time, magic is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Magic is there as fun.
And, right.
But every once in a while, you actually become not the magician, but the magi, where someone's struggling with something. And if you've performed for any length of time, you know what I'm talking about, because you have people coming up to you going, talking to you about cancer, talking to you about losing a loved one or somebody in jail or a son that won't
something serious.
Won't cooperate. And you know, us wise men, us magis, us people that seem to know why people are the way they are, we at least know it enough to be able to give people an alternate reality. People turn to us, and it's not all the time, but when they do, it is important that you give them good advice and, you know, tell them where to seek the professional help.
Yeah.
But you do not want to miss that opportunity to guide them to that professional help, because you might be the only person they ever told it to. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be something they're struggling with.
They might confide in you privately.
So, most of the time, magic is just, you know, let's have a good time. You know, right. In a restaurant specifically, I do not think of myself as a magician. I'm a host. I'm a glorified host. I am there to make the evening run smoother. And if I see a group of people that are talking, most of the time, I don't go over. If there's four people and there's two conversations going, unless I think the conversations are too divided, if I see them and it's just two guys talking and the two girls talking,
right,
and it's just too divided, it's almost like there's two tables going on there. Mm-hmm. So then I might go to that table.
Try to bring them together.
Yeah, because if I can unite the four of them, now it's going to be a better evening for them. Mm-hmm. If I, the obvious ones are the third wheels. If you see two girls and a guy, and that guy's on his phone, he's bored out of his mind because they haven't seen each other in a while, and they don't know how to bring him into the conversation because they're catching up. Well, by coming there and giving them a shared experience, a moment of magic, that what was that?
Right.
You know, they can now pull him in and go, holy cow, have you ever seen anything like that? Now all three are talking, mm-hmm. instead of it being he's the third wheel. So I'm really aware. I'm super sensitive of people that need me, people that don't need me. Like traditionally, magicians get hired for Valentine's Day all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the dumbest day
really
to perform.
Because?
Because you're all two tops. And they're all romantically involved.
They'd rather talk with each other rather than having somebody else.
Well, not just that. You standing, traditionally a man standing, performing impressive feats
Becomes a threat.
Becomes a threat to the sure. only alpha. There's two top, there's only going to be one alpha male.
Yeah.
You know, no matter where he's at in society. But there, he's the alpha male at mm-hmm. that table. And he will see you as a threat. Now, of course, you know, when when you're really young, or if you're really, you know, if you're out of the girl's range, he will never look at you as a threat.
Right.
But still, you are a person standing and being impressive mm-hmm. in a day that they're trying to connect on a deeper level.
That's a very interesting point.
You know, I generally will do my quick version of Anniversary Waltz.
Yeah.
I have a 30-second version that's on the free download at Murphy's. Mm-hmm. And we have Doc Eason's longer version, which I love when I have the time. But this 30-second version is perfect for Anniversary Waltz, for Valentine's Day.
And yours is kind of a stand-up, as I recall.
It is stand-up
as opposed to Doc being on the table.
Yeah, because not every situation, again, all of my magic I designed, you'll mm-hmm. stand up Monty and Imagination Coins and,
right.
and my version of Anniversary Waltz, you'll notice that it's all in the hands. Mm-hmm. That's because if I learn my magic standing, I can perform it anywhere.
Yeah.
If I learn it sitting, I'm now a slave to a table.
Good point.
Right? And now, if I learn how to properly construct sleight of hand while standing, if I can lap on top of that, forget it.
Yeah.
Now I can do extra things that I can play and I can jazz and I can have fun with mm-hmm. when I'm sitting. But if I only learned it sitting, now if I have to stand, I'm not comfortable. Now I'm working harder than I need to.
You said that you don't use comedy necessarily, mm-hmm. and so do you let the magic surprise people? And because people laugh when they're surprised.
Yep.
Di
Vernon's old thing where he said the only laughter that should come from a magic show is the witnessing of pure astonishment.
And so that's pretty much what you believe.
I really do. I do think, you know, in society today, our audiences are able to grasp a whole range of things. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really let people understand what to do with astonishment. Mm-hmm. So in the history of music, we have this evolution that had spanned over, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Right. Prehistoric times.
But the society learned how to enjoy the drumbeat before they learned how to enjoy the wind and the string
mm-hmm.
instruments. And then now, I mean, if you think about how it evolved, now we have laser lights, dancing girls, smoke machines, multimedia experience. At the same time, we're enjoying rhythm and sound. Because song is different than music. Song already is two arts combined. You have mm-hmm. music and lyrics,
okay.
right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So music, you know, came first. We had either a voice not singing words, but just making noise that was pleasing, like a bird. And then you have now we put words to it, and that's poetry. That's another art form that you're combining with music to make song. Mm-hmm. And so now a concert is all these big multimedia laser lights, dancing girls, smoke machines. But my interest point with this through line is that we never let our audiences learn how to enjoy the drum beat of magic.
Mm-hmm.
So, how long did we have a drum beat before we added an instrument we probably 10,000 years, 5,000 years, you know, so society could evolve with it. And here we got these, the drumbeat of magic is astonishment.
Okay.
And we have people clapping for magicians. And my thought is, if your audience can think to clap, you didn't really get them. A true astonished person is frozen. They're like...
So you're saying, let's say, particularly for mentalism, whenever I perform, I think, a really astonishing mind-reading effect, I like to think that they're stunned if they're not applauding or laughing. Yeah. It's like, did I do it right? You know, it, I think the answer is yes, that their astonishment is they don't know how to react.
Yeah, most good magicians, when performing a really impressive feat of magic, learn to get comfortable with the silence.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is our applause. And what's sad is a lot of magicians will add comedy because that silence is uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. They want to fill the void.
If you hear them laugh, you know they love you.
Mm-hmm.
If you hear silence, because the reaction to astonishment will look a lot like boredom.
Billy McComb, I remember, was talking once about the having some puns that he would use in his earlier days. And he said, I realized after a while that I'm just, like you said, kind of filling the void, I guess, and that they're really not funny. And so if I'm going to go for laughter, it should be a joke and not a pun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, there is those arguments that I agree with where, I mean, if you're going to be a comedy magician, you can't do 50% magic and 50% comedy.
Okay.
You know, you have to do 100% comedy and 100% magic.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually making your life harder, you know, because you got to be proficient at two arts.
Both. Mm-hmm.
And magic already at its fundamentals is already being proficient at two arts. Just like song is music and poetry combined.
Okay.
Magic is juggling and mime combined. Hmm. So you got to be 100% proficient at juggling and 100% proficient at mime. You got to do something difficult while pretending to do something else. And if you lack in one or the other, you're no longer a magician. You're going to be either a juggler or a mime. You'll just be an actor that can pretend, or you'll be a person that's skillful.
So the reason that people are successful, let's say like Jeff Hobson or Matt King, as a comedy magician, because they're 100% equal.
Matt does not sacrifice any magic in his show, if you're familiar with his show, and he doesn't sacrifice any comedy either.
Right.
And he's owning it. He knows his position. He knows his role. Guys like Penn and Teller and things like that, they make a decision and they own it, which is, to me, whether you agree with their position or not, you know, knowing, you know, you become an artist when you know what you're doing and you make decisions for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of art can happen accidentally, but when you know what you're doing, that's another thing. So what I like doing, I mean, what I really appreciate with working with David Blaine is that by turning the camera on the audience, we weren't just showing people's reactions. We were actually teaching the world how to enjoy magic. We were telling them, hey, applause is not the way to enjoy magic. The real way to enjoy astonishment is to emote, is to scream, is to validate it by turning to a friend and going, what the heck was that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's super important because the world didn't know how to, this is why we have people that go, oh, I don't like magic.
And
there's a lot of reasons. Well, my biggest thing is magic's not for everyone, no more than a roller coaster is for everyone. A roller coaster is a way of experiencing death without dying.
Okay.
Because we have evolved to be more advanced emotional creatures, and all you need is love is not really true. It's what you need to think to make better decisions for life, but we watch movies that are disturbing, and we enjoy being chased in a surrealist fantasy by a man with a gun in these action films.
Okay.
And it's because if it's safe, we can handle some of the darker things in human existence. And I would say that magic, the absurd moment, is a way of experiencing death without dying. Just like a roller coaster is a fall without a splat.
Mm-hmm.
Magic is a way of is facing head on an absurdity in nature without without succumbing to what nature would do if she astonished you. Because if Mother Nature astonishes you, it's going to be a hurricane, it's going to be a tornado, it's going to be an earthquake, right. It's going to be a tsunami. You're going to go, wow, isn't that beautiful? And then you die. You know, and it's going to be traumatic. It's going to change you. Where magic is an artistic way to share the extremes of life, these unknown moments that we do not have answers for. And, you know, I sense that a lot of magicians don't believe in magic. And that's because they think that the word magic is supposed to mean supernatural. Mm-hmm. And so magicians tend to shy away from the real meaning of magic, astonishment. And they say, no, the point of magic is entertainment. Well, if you answer that the point of magic is entertainment, you're missing the point of the question. Because the point of skateboarding is entertainment. The point of a painting is entertainment. Okay. The point of music is entertainment. What a person is asking when they ask what is the point of magic is, what is it entertaining? So here's the formula. A haunted house is entertaining because it scares you. A comedy club is entertaining because it makes you laugh. A juggler is entertaining because it impresses you. Music is entertaining for a lot of reasons, but let's just say it makes you dance. Magic is entertaining because you can't say it's entertaining because it's entertaining. So magic is entertaining because of astonishment. So
it bends the real and the physical, making it surreal.
Your
and
job is to give them a moment that they can't explain.
Yes.
Yet they know is not real.
Mm-hmm.
Not a moment where they're fooled. To me,
what's the difference?
Well, the huge difference. To me, let's take Penn and Teller Fool Us as an example. We have this wonderful showcase show that does a very good job showing off the skills of these magicians.
Right.
But if Penn and Teller doesn't stand up and go, we have no clue how that's even possible, just give them the trophy, that's when magic happens.
Yeah.
If Penn and Teller go, well, we know how you did it, we have an idea that you're using your sleeves. Mm-hmm. And then the person goes, no. And Johnny Thompson backstage goes, no, he didn't use his sleeves.
Right. Then you fooled us. Yeah.
Yes. But he also destroyed magic.
Because you gave them an out?
Okay. The wrong answer will destroy astonishment just as much as the right. The point is not to fool someone. The point is to give them this moment that has no answer. So if the audience goes, oh, it went up his sleeve. And then, so I see magicians with a lot of times with long sleeves on, and they vanish a coin with the sleeves down.
Yeah.
You know, so they're fully extended. Mm-hmm. And then they think by dropping their arms, that'll convince the audience, well, it couldn't have been up his sleeve.
Right.
But the moment's gone. They've mm-hmm. already ruined the moment of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Because he vanished a coin above his waist, and the coin was gone, and the audience went, well, it probably went up his sleeve.
Right.
And then the moment's over. The astonishment is gone, and then he drops his hands, and they go, oh, by the way, yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Michael Marr had said one time that if you do a card and sealed wallet, or sealed envelope inside your wallet or whatever, and you've had the card signed and vanished from the deck, and you've done it perfectly, except that for some moment that you didn't flash, but you might have made a quick movement or whatever. And then they say, oh, I know what he did. I saw him and he moved his hand into the wallet, mm-hmm. you know. It's like even though they didn't see anything, trick's over because they have an out of how that it possibly may have had. I don't know how I got it out of the deck. No, I don't know how that the signed card was in there. And I don't know how the envelope got sealed, but I saw what he did.
Well,
no, they didn't.
Even deeper than that, because, that's 100% true. But even if it's just an intellectual thing.
Yeah.
Let's take the pen through quarter. I would do the pen through quarter at table one, and I'm moving over to table two, and I'm listening to table one, and the wife says to the husband, honey, how did he do that?
Yeah.
And he goes, I have no idea. I mean, he must have another coin with a hole in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's an engineer, and he's logical. And
trying to think of some out.
And guess what? That is not only a answer, but he's pretty much got it.
Right.
Right? So if you like, that's why I chose not, it was that effect. And that's why it popped in my head that I chose to stop using comedy. as a necessity for switching things. Because if you switch the coin for pen through coin with a joke, well, they will be misdirected and they will look away. But if later their only logical answer is, even if they didn't see anything, if their only answer is, but there must be a coin with a hole in it somewhere, you know, and we were laughing and we were having such a good time, he could have done anything, but I didn't see anything, but there must be. And that is a answer. You know, so now the way I present pen through coin is I put the quarter down and I say, I want you to know I'm going to put that pen through that quarter. I want you to make sure that I use that quarter and not any other quarter. I want you to check the quarter out. I'll use your quarter. Yeah. You know, and I do not let the quarter ever leave your sight. And now just keep watching it, keep watching it, keep watching it. And then now I'm confirming them. So because I know that the only answer logically is that there must be another coin with a hole in it.
But if you've already dispelled that.
So your energy, your attention to the routine conviction must only be focused on proving that it is not another coin, that you are using the coin that was there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put a joke in there as a switch, that is going to be a moment that maybe fools them in the moment.
But later they're going to go back and say, well, I blinked or I looked away whenever he told that joke.
Yeah,
and
it's not going to resonate the way astonishment really resonates with people. They're not going to remember it forever. They're not going to go, he did not switch that coin. He put the pen through that coin and I still have the coin with me today.
Yeah.
And that's when you achieve astonishment. You know, if Penn and Teller have answers that are just as valid as the, you know, if you put your hand in the pocket and come out with the same deck, and Penn and Teller said, well, we saw you do a deck switch, and then you said, no, I didn't. Well, technically you fooled them, but you did it at the cost of magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fooling someone is getting a person to be wrong. Astonishment is when a person has no answer. That is because this thought, this moment that just is in front of them, can't settle in any of the boxes in their head. It's not done, you know, because we have these boxes. When they watch a magic show, they have boxes in their head. And one box is labeled, it's done with mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Another box is labeled, it's up the sleeve. And another box is labeled smoke. And another box is labeled, he's so fast. Another box is labeled misdirection.
Okay.
And so when an audience watches this, they already have been spoiled in a lot of ways. So us magicians have to work even harder because they're educated. And now you have to make sure the presentation you made doesn't fit in any one of those boxes. Because astonishment is when a moment floats and can't settle in your mind.
Find a box.
It can't find a box, and it haunts you. And you wake up every morning for the next week or longer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe every time someone brings up magic, that thing is still up there floating around. You just haven't thought about it. But this moment in time has nowhere to go. This moment in time, and you're like, what the heck was that? And notice, if you get someone to believe that it was supernatural, that settles. Because there's a box labeled, he has psychic powers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a box labeled, you know, when you get someone to believe you actually read someone's mind, it's at the sacrifice of astonishment. It's at the sacrifice of magic.
Because some people actually believe that, Ed.
Well, no, because the audience at that moment, and I know there's a lot of mentalists out there, and I really want you to think about this. The audience at that moment is not amazed out of astonishment. They're amazed out of fear.
Huh. That's a big difference.
They are going, I know how you did it. You read my mind. You're great. You're amazing. Be my friend so you don't use your powers against me.
Mm-hmm. Just like in Houdini's day, they believe that he actually did dematerialize from the metamorphosis in the trunk. It's like, yeah, of course he did.
You know, and in a lot of ways, I love mentalism when done by a magician.
Mm-hmm.
When it's framed right, audiences can address it as a magic trick. And there must have been a time for this ethical issue years ago, or else we wouldn't have the term magic trick.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The reason that word trick is there is to remind people that this is not to be worshipped. This is not supernatural. There is a method to the madness. There's a trick to the magic. But somewhere we forgot that. And somewhere we started tricking people with magic instead of telling people there's a trick to the magic.
you know, you've just kind of blown my mind over here, because I've been thinking and saying for the longest time that my belief of what magic is something that happens in an instant, and it could be a millisecond or something. For just a moment, it's like they can't find that box. I've never heard it said so eloquently as what you're just saying, as far as having those boxes of where they can compartmentalize how the trick was actually accomplished. And I'm thinking that whenever I've done something, that for that moment, it's like, what the heck? Oh, well, he must have done this, this, or this. And so as a logical, sentient human being is going to come to some rational explanation, that our job as a magician is to try to keep that actual realization postponed as long as possible, mm-hmm. so they maintain that sense of magic, saying, I don't know how I did it, but this, you know, my credit card ended up in his wallet, or mm-hmm. whatever it was. Or what you're saying is that we should be trying every time to achieve complete astonishment, so there is no box for them ever to put that in.
Well, I'm a magician, and I believe in magic. And I believe that if you could take whatever methods, and by putting mystery and wonder back in it, you have magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lot of ways, I think of mentalism as for magicians that can't do magic. For magicians that can't establish a sense of wonder.
Talk about that. We just before we got on the air over here, we were talking about mentalism versus magic, and you said those are two separate things.
We try to combine them in our world, and the reason is because if a magician does a mentalist trick,
mm-hmm.
the audience frames it right. The audience knows he's not reading minds; he's a magician.
Okay,
and that forces them to not have a box that says mind reading actually exists, and therefore it settles there. And it brings it back to astonishment, because it was presented by a magician, someone
okay.
who's doing something to manifest these moments, and to conjure up these moments. I mean, that's what our job is. As soon as you have a mentalist that's too good, Uri Geller, or I think that in a lot of ways they can do more damage than good. I mean, right now on America's Got Talent, we had the clairvoyants.
Yeah.
And they did such a good job that people the next day were talking about that they actually have a spirit they're talking to somehow.
Mm-hmm. Real powers.
And you even have churches saying, well, we know what they're doing. They're in league with demons and stuff like that. And
right.
they exaggerate it that way. And when, no, it's just a trick. However, when you present it as real, you're actually doing a disservice to the audience. And, you know, one of the things I came to a realization is that they're paying to see me, and they're giving me time and their attention. And then, you know, my rule for life is I want to leave everybody better off because they met me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I validate the existence of a spirit that I know wasn't true in my presentation, if I validate the existence of mind, you know, melting metal, which I know isn't true in my presentation,
right.
if I validate it for that audience member, I've now made them less likely to make critical decisions about the world around them, and thus doing them harm. I would much rather you pick my pocket and take every dollar in my pocket right now, even though I'm in the middle of a tour. I'd rather you take every dollar in my pocket than convince me of something that isn't true, because I can earn this money back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you convince me of something that isn't true, you've wounded me for life. And now every critical decision that touches on that subject, you have validated that, and now I'm more susceptible to go to a psychic and spend 20 grand on trying to contact my grandmother, because I saw this magician and he was able to talk to a spirit, and therefore the psychics are real. And now you have done that person, that individual, a disservice. And if you don't think people believe in your magic, you know, you got to talk to them. You'll hear, you know, out of 100 people, maybe one or two are really going to believe. And then there are a bunch of those 100 that are on the fence,
mm-hmm.
where they're not sure. But you become a piece of the puzzle that validates the con man who's going to try to take advantage of them.
I remember seeing Glenn Falkenstein at the Magic Castle, one of the first times I ever went to the castle, mm-hmm. back in late 70s or early 80s, whenever. And after he was finished, and he does blindfold act, and he and Francis had done the spirit cabinet and everything, people were lined up to the side of the stage to ask him questions about their job, their future, their romance, or, you know, their personal relationships, believing that he's going to be able to answer all these questions because he had validated. I hadn't thought about connecting those two until you just said that, though.
Yeah, and I mean, right now we're trying really hard to pass the bill to make magic an art.
Yeah.
And I think that this is one of the hang-ups. I think that the reason people have a hard time seeing magic as an art is because a lot of magicians out there are still using it as a con. I can use paint to make a masterpiece, but I can also use paint to camouflage a tank. Mm-hmm. I can use a knife to kill or cook. How you use the tool is important. And until we get the world to understand that Salvador Dali never wanted you to believe that there is a melting clock in the middle of the desert, mm-hmm. but he just wanted you to experience it. That magic is the gift of an abstract performance art. It's a gift of a moment that we can give you. We can shape this moment and make it abstract. And until the audience sees that, they will never accept us as an art. Every magician out there today, you know this. You know that you have to educate your audience about your presentation, because they will, if you don't, they will lump you in as a con man or a trickster, or, you know, you have to kind of have this moment early on in your show where you kind of state what you're about. And if you don't, then you're just, you know, whatever biases the audience brings to your show is going to be what's there. So you have to reframe it. But imagine, you know, the future of magic, the success of the future of magic is going to depend on the world accepting that magic is the gift of an abstract performance art, the gift of a moment that isn't real, and that it's not there to convince you, but to be enjoyed. And my argument to my audience is, as soon as the person's trying to sell you something, you have every right to rip apart that art piece. You have every, because there's an art to the con. There's an art to everything. Mm-hmm. But you have every time to rip up and destroy and attack and criticize the craft of a con man. However, if they're not selling anything, and all they're trying to do is, in the spirit of giving, I want to share with you a moment that is impossible. That is what that's what abstract artists do. Salvador Dali was not trying to convince anybody a melting clock existed. Yep. He just wanted everybody to experience it. And that's really the beauty of magic, is how blessed are we that we can ignore survival for a moment and wear clothes and be in a home and be protected and have this blessing of whatever lifestyle.
Yeah. Food, clothing, shelter.
Yeah. And then we are so safe that we can enjoy music. Because if you study psychology, you'll find that if survival is not addressed, people cannot enjoy art.
Well, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Exactly.
As you start to move on up, I mean, you have to have certain basic things before you finally get to a point that you appreciate. You have time to appreciate these things.
And that's why early on, abstract art could not be accepted. But as our culture became more educated and more civilized, we started to understand it, and therefore we can accept it. Mm-hmm. And my argument is that magic is abstract performance art, and we are blessed to be able to even entertain these. I mean, it's virtual reality without technology. I mean, we can break the laws of a moment, and it's the answer to the question, what do you get a guy who has everything? You get him a moment he can't pay for. You could be, you know, Steve Wozniak, and you can't pay to see matter dematerialize.
Yeah,
or else you'd cause a black hole and suck us into nothingness. You need an artist to manifest that moment. You need a magician to make that happen so that we can turn our attention to even abstract things like these impossible things that we can now experience. An artist takes a flat surface and with skill can create the illusion of depth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a deception.
Correct.
It's a deception to entertain you, and it's called art. When you use, you know, two-point perspective and you use shading to create texture and depth, you are creating a deception. You're creating an illusion. But it's also known as a painting.
Right.
You know, it's known as art. So an artist can take a flat surface, a two-dimensional plane.
And make it look three-dimensional.
And with skill can cave it in and make it three-dimensional. So my point is that magicians are doing the same exact thing. But we're not shaping canvas or clay. We're shaping literally space and time. We're shaping a moment. And if I cave that in, I can create the illusion of a fourth dimension. I can go from 3D to 4D, much like an artist goes from 2D to 3D. So by caving the moment in, I now can demonstrate matter being created and destroyed. We can break the laws of thermodynamics. We can have things jump from place to place. We can have objects that occupy two spaces at the same time. Mm-hmm. We can break all the laws of physical reality because we're creating the illusion of a fourth dimension. And much like M.C. Escher can draw things on a two-dimensional plane that can't even exist in a three-dimensional world.
Right. Like the steps continue
to go up. I would argue
that
magic is illustrating things in a three-dimensional world that can't even exist in a fourth dimension. Because the laws of thermodynamics must hold true even in a parallel dimension, or else that parallel dimension would collapse. So, matter cannot be created nor destroyed. That would also, it has to hold true. If it didn't, that parallel dimension would instantly be gone the moment it was created.
Are you saying that magic is a better art than others as far as giving in a...
My whole family, all of them are artists.
Okay.
And I wouldn't say a better art. It's a different art. And now the...
So it's not a craft. You call it an art, not a craft.
It is. Well, there is a craft to it, and the result is an art. The experience of it is the art. But there's definitely a craft to everything, and there's an art to everything.
Wow, I think we almost need to take a moment and catch a breath and try to absorb some of this information that he has given us. There is a lot of wisdom in the words that Garrett is giving us here, and I think I need a while to kind of digest all of this. I hope you understand, and we're going to cut this here and resume again next week. And in the meantime, one of the things that he has done is given us three decks of the Anniversary Waltz card deck. That is, it's a deck of double facers that are required for the Magic Trick Anniversary Waltz. And if you go to the website, you can fill out the form and you can register to win one of these three free decks. And they will be delivered to you free of charge, no shipping if you live within the U.S. If you are outside of the U.S. and its territories, then there will be foreign shipping added, and we'll let you know what that charge is going to be, and you can decide whether you want to pay for the shipping or not. And if you don't, then we'll just go to the next person whose name is going to be randomly selected. But if you would, just go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com and scroll to the bottom of this particular blog and enter the contest. Now, this is just going to run for a couple of weeks. It's going to run through this week and next when we have part two of the conversation here with Garrett. So you have a little while to go ahead and register. But if you're listening to this in the archives, the contest is passed. So you would have missed it. You're going to need to kind of catch up with this and listen currently as we go, because we offer these contests from time to time. And I also want to welcome and thank the newest friend of the Magic Word, Roscoe and Rose Red, LLC. That's how that they had made their donation through PayPal, and you could do the same thing there too. If you go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, up in the top left, there's a place where you can donate through PayPal if you want to do it one time or on an ongoing basis. Or if you go through patreon.com/themagicword, you can also donate on an ongoing basis there and be a sustaining member. We thank you guys a lot for this. And that's what helps us pay for some of the shipping that we do for the gifts that are given out, and also for all of our ongoing costs and domain charges and software, et cetera, that we have to pay for each month. So I want to thank again our guests, Stan Allen and Garrett Thomas, and just hang in there until next week, and we will have part two with Garrett Thomas. And so in the meantime, I'm going to say stay well, get booked, and consider creating astonishment in your audience. This is Scotty out.